Joshua Hausman, and I'm joined by Nick Dyka. Nick, how's it going?
Good, Josh. Thanks for having me, as always.
It's always great to have you here. It still would be weird doing this with someone else, which I haven't done yet. But that is still the plan. So today we're going to talk about the Jays are 10-9, and it's sort of been the we are who they thought they were meme with the way the Jays are, because the offense has been struggling, the pitching staff has been good, and the Jays are playing exactly like tight games every single game. Some guys are coming around. Some starting pitchers are having great starts to the season. Others a little shakier. And the bullpen's had some returns in the last couple of days. But let's start with the offense. Basically, we had our season preview, and we expressed some concern about how the offense would perform. What are your thoughts on how it has actually gone to this point, Nick?
I think it has kind of been, like you said, how we thought it was going to be. I think we've seen some great performances from Justin Turner and Dalton Varsho, some surprising performances by weighted runs created plus. IKF is currently at 110, which is much higher than his career mark. Yep. We've seen George Springer kind of be the same guy as last year. Same with Vlad. Bo hasn't really got it going yet. But I think on aggregate, yeah, like you said, they've kind of struggled. It's been a pitching and defense first team, and it's been a lot of like eking out 5-3 wins, 3-1, 4-1, that kind of thing. So they certainly haven't done anything so far to convince us they're a different offensive team, from my perspective.
They definitely haven't. Obviously, as you mentioned, some of those guys, like Bichette, has got a 646 OPS. Mm-hmm. That's not going to stay the same. Vlad, 715, that's not going to stay the same. Springer, 666, that shouldn't stay the same. Kirk, 507. Mm-hmm. Like, these are terrible numbers. But Justin Turner's not going to probably post a 943 OPS. That's unreasonable. IKF is not going to have that 110 WRC plus. And Kevin Biggio is probably not going to be in the 135 range.
Yeah.
But it still has the same issue where there is likely to be a situation where there are a few good hitters and a few not so good hitters. Kevin Kiermaier looks absolutely done. I don't know what the heck is going on there. He's struck out in 35% of his at-bats, and he's just not doing any damage whatsoever. And, this was always the worry with Kiermaier. It wasn't so much that he'd be this bad, because he's never been this bad, but it's that last year was his best in half decade or more.
That's right, yeah.
And then he's 35, and he just likely wasn't going to hit again. And now, and it creates this situation where there are just holes at the bottom of the lineup, which is never what you really mm-hmm. want.
No. One thing I think, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, Josh, but is part of Vlad's struggles this year, the middle and bottom of the lineup are so weak that teams don't have to pitch to him and they're pitching around him? Whereas, like, is it a coincidence or not a coincidence, that his best year did come when he had Marcus Semien, prime George Springer, and Bo in front of him, with Teoscar and Lourdes and Danny Jansen behind him? Because he doesn't have that kind of lineup around him right now. And I'm wondering if part of Vlad's struggles are literally just he's the only guy they really have to game plan for in a way they didn't have to when the Jays had like a more formidable lineup.
It's not a crazy thought. I do think part of the issue more is that he's just swinging a lot of pitches that he shouldn't swing at. His swing decisions, despite the fact he's got 14 walks, which is incredible for this point in the season, to 15 strikeouts, which is a very healthy ratio, but it is an elevated strikeout rate for him by a little bit. And he's just swinging at a lot of pitches that are not good pitches to swing at. Whether that's he has this thing where he comes up with runners in scoring position and he tends to swing at the first pitch no matter where it is,
mm-hmm.
and it's resulting in him doing a lot less damage than he could. And then he's been chasing some pitches that are wildly out of the strike zone plate. So,
did you see that one? It was in the other batter's box. I can't remember what game it was.
I was at that game. It was a changeup from the short pitcher for the Yankees, whose name I can't remember, but Marinucci or what? I don't remember his name properly, but yeah, I did see that one, and that was about as bad as it gets. And he had another one against Marcus Stroman that was more defensible because of the way Stroman was attacking and the way the umpire was calling strikes. But it's been a thing for him this season, and I think he's going to have to tighten that up a little bit more in order to get back to the guy that he even was last year.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully that happens, because there hasn't been a lot of like encouraging signs from Alejandro Kirk. You know, like you said, Kevin Kiermaier's not looking great. George Springer, at what point do we say he's the same age as Kiermaier? At what point do we say, you know, he is getting up there in terms of baseball years? Maybe he is more of like a league average offensive hitter and like a two war player, as opposed to like the, you know, four war 125 guy.
Oh boy, I'm not ready to do that yet, because I mean, you're saying by weighted runs created plus, that was the number you used?
Yeah. For like, that's when I said 125. That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Just to clarify that. So
yeah,
that would just be such an extreme fall from where he was, because if you look, going back to what's the one, 2019, I think is the year. Yes, they had the Super Bowls in 2019, so that's why his OPS was 155. Okay. But then it normalized a bit after that, and it was WRC plus 143, 140, 133, 104, 104. That's last year and this year. That drop is just so big that it's hard to believe that it's just that's how it is with him. I mean, his strikeout rate is 11.6%. His walk rate is 15.1% in the early going this season. His BABIP is 230. It's just, you expect those numbers would just be better than that. You know, his WOBA is 310. His ex-WOBA is 341. So, no, I don't think this is who he is. Do I think he's going to be the guy who's 130 WRC plus? No, probably not. But 115, 120, I do think that's still reasonably in the case. And I think we have to go through another full season of this before I start thinking that that's his new normal.
Right. Are you excited by any of the early starts? Like, do you think any of them are sustainable between, obviously, again, Turner's not going to hit as well as he's hitting now, but do you think he's capable of having a good Justin Turner season still at age 39? Like, Varsho feels like he's, you know, his four home runs are kind of buoying, otherwise pretty underwhelming numbers to me, but do you feel differently? Like,
so I'll take those one at a time. I do not believe Isaiah Kiner-Falefa's numbers are going to sustain. I'll stick with that one. So Justin Turner, I'm on record as being in favor of the signing of Justin Turner. Would I prefer JD Martinez? Sure, probably I would. But, you know, Turner, if he had not been just consistently very good for basically his entire career, including this season, I would say 39 years old, probably not. But even if you look at last year, he was having a tremendous season. And then he got hurt right at the end. He had I think it was his foot he broke or something like that. And he was playing on it to the point where he couldn't move anymore at one point. But he had an 845 OPS at the end of August. And then he was just terrible in his September when he eventually just got shut down for the season. He was so bad in September that his numbers got dragged down to an 800. But so, yeah, I have no reason to doubt that Justin Turner can still do it at 39 because he still did it at 38. Varsho, while you're 100% right that the home runs are inflating his numbers to this point, there were some encouraging things in there, though, because in the last two games, he had a double and a home run against left-handed pitching. That was the first home run against left-handed pitching he's hit as a Blue Jay. He only hit one in 2022. And the approach on both of them was pretty good. Just staying on pitches and then driving them. So I've always believed that Varsho was a better hitter than he was last year, just because he had been with Arizona. So I still believe that Varsho will be fine. I don't think he's going to be a star hitter, and he's not been one. So I believe these general, like his WRC plus might be around the same, but just distributed differently than it is.
around the same as in like what it's sitting at now, because he's at like 122 now, which if Dalton Varsho can have a 122 WRC plus, I mean, that's a,
okay, maybe not 122, but 110. I could see 110.
Okay. Yeah, you're not worried about the, you know, kind of like the exit velocity, because he doesn't hit the ball particularly hard and he doesn't walk very much. Not too worried about those things?
Well, he's got a 9.8% walk rate so far this year, and that was sort of something he was working on heavily in spring training and succeeding at. So I think that the walk rate is sustainable. I mean, it is acceptable. You know, 9.8% for a guy who doesn't strike out a ton. He's basically a league average when it comes to strikeouts. Mm-hmm. So I think with the way he swings and when he pulls the ball, he doesn't need to be a extreme exit velocity guy. 88.1 is okay. And a max exit velo of, I mean, he's usually around 110 to the 110 range. That's acceptable power for someone who pulls the ball and lifts it. So I'm not too worried about those things now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think for me, one of the things I've noticed watching the team early on is the lineup is not deep. No. And because it's not deep, I'm very frightened of an injury to one of the more key contributors, because I don't see where they're going to replace, you know, a Vlad or Bo or even Turner, which I think even if he's going to hit well, it's probably not unreasonable to assume a 39-year-old might miss a bit of time.
No, you're right. The nice thing about the Jays' current setup is that, yeah, you're right. If one of those guys gets hurt, it's going to be worse because of how important those players are to the lineup. So, yes, that's going to be difficult. But they do have some very ready players in the minors who actually have offensive pedigree. It's not just, you know, like, for example, like Aurelius Martinez and Addison Barger. These guys were expected to hit, and they are raking in the minors. Will Robertson is having an incredible start to the season in the minors. Damiano Palmigiani is hitting for power the way he's supposed to. He's going to strike out a lot, so I'm not 100% sure on him. They do have, and then Spencer Horowitz is being Spencer Horowitz, where he hits for an extreme batting average and on base percentage and doesn't hit for power. But you know, those guys are all major league caliber bats, I believe, except for potentially Palmigiani. So I do think that they have high ceiling guys that can step in and help in those scenarios. But most teams don't have the luxury of losing a star. But the Jays do have luxury of losing the depth in their roster because the lineup isn't that deep. So it's actually a weird situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like if they had to drop down from Davis Schneider to Will Robertson, or from Ernie Clement to Aurelius Martinez, or Addison Barger from Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, I'm not even sure those would be worse.
Right. Yeah. I feel like the Jays lineup is a little thinner than other kind of elite teams. And I'm only saying elite teams because, you know, we were coming into the year with the idea that the Jays were a contender and things like that. So that's why I am comparing them to elite teams. And, you know, you've seen them run through Houston and New York. I think both those teams have better lineups than the Jays. I mean, I don't think Colorado has as good a lineup as the Jays, but aside from the Rockies, you know, I don't think they've played a team that couldn't sustain an injury to a star. Excuse me.
The Mariners absolutely couldn't.
Right. Yeah, I guess that's true. That's true of Seattle.
And like,
yeah, I guess they're built really similar to the Jays when you
they
think
are
about
very
it.
Very similar yeah. teams. But I mean, if you tell me that the Yankees lose Juan Soto or Aaron Judge for an extended period of time, that lineup still gets a lot weaker. I mean, that lineup in New York, do you really believe in anybody other than those two to absolutely have a good year? I mean, yeah, Volpe has shown really good strides, so okay, maybe him, but Rizzo,
I mean, Verdugo's a solid player. He's not great.
He's just fine, right? Like this, like Alex Verdugo is not going to be driving an offense. I mean, he's fine.
The Jays have four people with WRC pluses in the 80s potentially, right? Like, you know, Varsho did last year, IKF did last year. Kiermaier's, what's his career, like 95, 90? Like, that's a third of the lineup right there, not even considering Kirk. And I would take, personally, I would definitely take the Yankees lineup
I'm not suggesting that the Jays would be as secure as the Yankees on it. I'm just saying that most teams, the Dodgers and the Braves are, in my mind, and the Astros, mm-hmm. I'll give you the Astros. Those three teams can afford their top guys going down. Maybe the Rangers too. But most teams can't. I mean, most teams have just a very steep drop-off if that happens because they don't have deep lineups. The Jays just happen to have a lot of variance in the rest of theirs. For example, like if you told me that Dalton Varsho, George Springer, Davis Schneider, Alejandro Kirk, Danny Jansen, any of these guys going to go off, I'd be like, yeah, that could happen. I mean, I can't even say that Kevin Biggio's numbers are unsustainable because he's done it before.
Well, over short periods of time, you know, never for a full year. But
I mean, like for his first 690 plate appearances of his career, he had a 798 OPS.
Right. Was he being protected from lefties?
No. It was just he came up later in 2019 and then 2020, there were only 60 games.
Mm-hmm.
And he played 59 of them. Yeah. So he was an everyday player who had a 790 OPS that was heavily driven by on base percentage, which is basically what his numbers are right now with his 370 on base and 417 slugging. It's almost exactly what those numbers were.
Yeah.
So do I think he's going to keep that up? No, but I don't think it's crazy. And I think that's where the weird thing is with the Jays lineup. It's just that they have a lot of guys who could be good and they don't have a lot of time to find out if they are.
Yeah. I think we're kind of saying the same thing two different ways, which is just basically, you know, hitters 4 through 9 in the Jays lineup have a lot of variance to them.
And well, five. I don't think that Justin Turner has much variance despite his age.
Okay. And I think if you do look around the league, whether it's again the Yankees or I know one time we were talking offline like about the Mets, like because I think the Mets have we were debating if the Mets have a better lineup. And I just think, you know, again, 5 through 9, they have more stability. You know, Jeff McNeil's not a world beater, but he's not going to oscillate between like an 80 WRC plus and a essentially 120. And, you know, same with the guy like Starling Marte. Yeah.
I do want to move off the offense because we've been talking about it for a long time. But I just want to say the one thing is that the nice thing for the Jays is that they do have their best players in AAA all play the same positions as those guys in the 5 to 9. So if someone just shows they can't do it, they do have guys who can come up and potentially do it. So there is hope there, at least, even if it doesn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so enough about the offense because it has been depressing. Let's go to something good and happy because after Gausman had his stumbles in the second and third start because he didn't have spring training, he looked tremendous against the Yankees. And that the last term through the rotation, the Jays as a staff had an ERA in the ones. And I want to talk about specifically Jose Berríos and Yusei Kikuchi because both of those guys look like they're actually, just from a stuff perspective, aside from the fact that results match it, they both look like they're taking a step forward, which is surprising given the veteran status of both pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
Have you watched much of their outings?
Yeah, I watched the last Kikuchi start, and I think I saw Berríos' first two.
Yeah, we saw one together against Houston.
That's right, yeah. So I guess my question, Josh, to you as kind of like the pitching expert, is like how much is a legitimate step forward versus them maybe like feeling fresh and rested in April? You know, they haven't logged as many innings, not in the slog of traveling and all the other stuff that comes with the season. Is it possibly just they're being crisp because they are feeling good at this point in time?
Absolutely, that is possible. I definitely wouldn't want to dismiss that. But they've never done it before in the early parts of the season. So I don't know. Like, I just don't know why I would assume that would be the case. So,
And with Berríos, looks different?
Well, for Berríos, it's two things. The command he's showing this year, I've never seen it from him. His ability to place his four-seamer on the edges up in the zone was a big problem for him at times both of the last 2 years, despite his success last year.
Yeah.
And his mechanics just look a little cleaner, and also his breaking ball just looks a little tighter. I don't know. I actually haven't looked at the stats on the breaking ball to see if it's moving any differently, but from the visual perspective, it looks different. So I don't know. I just think that that's something that is interesting to monitor going forward. And actually, the stats do show it. His breaking ball has more horizontal break than it has since he was basically a rookie, and just as much vertical break.
Right.
So it is moving more. Mm-hmm. And when you have that, actually, as it's the most vertical break he's had other than last year by 0.02 inches. So it's the same with increased horizontal movement. So it is just breaking bigger than it has pretty much any year in his career. So I do think that's real. And Kikuchi has just changed his pitch mix.
Yeah.
He's just throwing more curveballs. His changeup sucks. I mean, he's got a circle change that he's brought in. And I shouldn't say it sucked. He just can't command it yet because he's just started learning it. But I've noticed that he's been really going curveball heavy, and he's increased the velocity back on the slider to create more separation. He's throwing a slider in the 90-91 range, especially last year when it was in the 80-70-88 range, which didn't really differentiate it that much from his curveball.
Yeah. It's a good reminder that these pitchers are always having to make adjustments, and I'm sure the hitters are too, and are going to try to adjust to these new pitch mixes and changes in movement profile. And you know, Major League Baseball, it's just a continual back and forth, I'm guessing, of adjusting and trying to adjust to that. And I'm glad to see the Jays starters are, you know, making some gains in that department, especially, and not to dwell on the offense, but it seems like whatever the offensive approach has been one that hasn't yielded the same results.
Yeah. I'll just say yeah, so we can leave that behind. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so like I'm looking at Kikuchi's numbers. He's throwing just slightly harder than he's ever thrown, but by fractions of a mile per hour. So that doesn't really matter. But his slider is over 2 miles an hour than it's ever been, mile an hour faster. So I do think that while, yes, hitters can adjust to it by game planning, the pitch mixes themselves are tough to adjust to just because they look so similar. His slider and his curveball have similar movement patterns, but the curve just breaks down a little bit more and is 6 miles an hour slower. Mm-hmm. So that's really tough for a hitter to time up, especially when he's pumping 95 up in the zone. So
yeah,
as long as he can keep throwing strikes, which is always the thing with Yusei Kikuchi, I'm really confident in what I'm seeing. I didn't know what to believe about Kikuchi this year, but what I've seen in the beginning of the season, even though he got torched in his first start, I'm really encouraged by it.
Yeah. In terms of stuff, how does Yariel Rodriguez's stuff look? Because he made his debut on Saturday, was it?
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
Well, so we talked about Yariel Rodriguez in our preview episode. I saw him in spring in person. Mm-hmm. Everyone else saw him on TV. I like it. I'm a fan of his stuff because – so stuff plus and – metrics like that are not going to properly like him. Again, I said this before, but I'll repeat it in case people didn't listen to that one. Because his four-seam fastball naturally cuts. And it comes in the mid-90s with a really deep slider. He throws a curveball occasionally.
Yeah.
And he's actually started throwing a few sinkers, just two-seamers, just to give them a look and moving in the other direction. And I think he's got a splitter that he throws sometimes. Splitter or changeup. I think it's a splitter. That's all right. It's not bad, but he's basically, his heavy mix is fastball slider. I like them a lot. And he changes his arm angle to create different movement patterns as opposed to different pitches. Because so he drops his arm on his fastball a ton. And every now and then he'll drop it on the slider. So instead of he's having that deep breaking curveball like slider, he gets more of a frisbee sweeper action on it. So I like what I saw from him. Now, it was only one major league start, and he did give up some hard contact. I mean, I think the average exit velocity against him in the day was like 92 miles an hour.
Oh, wow.
But it's one start, so that doesn't really mean a whole lot. But I like what I'm seeing there. And he does pose a very interesting problem because they have this other guy in the minors who's rehabbing who has probably not expecting to be in competition for that spot.
No, I feel like when you get Cy Young votes, you assume that if you're healthy, you're going to get a spot in a big league rotation.
Yeah. So obviously we're talking about Alek Manoah. he struggled in his first spring training start, and then he got hurt. He rehabbed, and then he came back to, and he's in doing rehab assignment, and it hasn't gone much better. In his first outing, he threw 1 2/3 innings. He walked 4. He hit a batter, gave up 5 hits. In his second outing, he threw 3 1/3, gave up 8 hits. Only the 1 walk, which was good. 4 strikeouts. The velocity's there. The break's there, but the command is not there yet. Now, he had no spring training. He has a very different body. So he's still pitching against hitters for really the first time since changing everything about his physique and with going through all the mechanical adjustments he made last year. Mm-hmm. So I'm by no means saying that these two horrible minor league outings mean he's cooked. I think we need to see improvement, and he's got his rehab assignment will last into the beginning of May because it's 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
But originally the plan was for Bowden Francis to hold the job down, and then there would be no fight for that fifth spot. Bowden Francis would just cede it because Bowden Francis is not a guy who they're building on for the future. He's not an elite fifth starter type. He can do it. His numbers suggest that he can. He has some terrible starts that were just boosted by one horrible inning, especially against the Yankees. But that's not what happened. They made the switch to Yariel Rodriguez, who is very much part of the future. He signed to a 5-year deal. So I'm not sure what's going to happen if Alek Manoah cleans it up and Yariel Rodriguez keeps pitching well. I mean, touch wood, because these things tend to work themselves out with pitchers.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting conundrum that they are now potentially facing.
Do you think, and I know we talked about this a little bit in the past, and you weren't as concerned as I think maybe I was about them managing Yariel Rodriguez's innings because he didn't pitch last year. I know he's not a 21-year-old or anything like that, but would that be a simple solution where they move Rodriguez to long relief again, just to manage his innings?
I don't know. I don't think that that's necessarily the best plan,
mm-hmm.
but I do think it's probably the most logical one. Like if that doesn't make sense. The one's the most logical and not the best, but
no, it does.
I do think that's probably what will end up happening just because he's pitched in relief before, and I said I wasn't worried about him being elevated because he's older, right? He's mm-hmm. not young, and he's thrown a bunch of innings in the past in Cuba, and even in Japan out of relief, he threw 100 innings. But I think that he could just start and go back to down to the minors and start, but I think that he might pitch well enough that is what happens. Like if he keeps getting the job done, and Manoah comes back and they don't want to go to a 6-man rotation, I think the move is Francis, you're down. Manoah, you're in the fifth starter. Yariel, you're going to get a lot of work as our long reliever or middle long reliever, not used like the way Bowden Francis is being used, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, unfortunately, like you said, and touch wood, it doesn't happen. But when it comes to pitching in the major leagues, this stuff does have a tendency to work itself out.
Although it's interesting to note that because of the actual nature of who the Jays' top four starters are, obviously they can get hurt. Gausman mm-hmm. already got started slow because of a shoulder soreness thing, and pitching just gets you injured. But Bassett, Gausman, Kikuchi, and Berríos are four of the traditionally healthiest pitchers in the league. Again, touching wood, because I don't want to jinx that. So we'll see, I guess, is the best way to put it.
We will.
All right. We'll just quickly touch on the bullpen because, we're running a bit long before. We don't have any questions today, so we can go a bit longer on this part. But the bullpen has been interesting because if you look, we talked about all these close Jays wins. Well, they've been blown out a bunch. They have not had many close losses, the last game against New York notwithstanding.
The run differential is not good.
No, it's terrible. And then you look at some of those run differentials. Like you look at that game against Seattle, the last one of that series, both sweeps they could have accomplished but didn't. That game was 1-1 going into the 10th, and they lost by 5.
That's right.
Because the Jays' bullpen was not – well, so it's a deep bullpen, but some of the players who were being counted on to perform in the early parts of the season – were either not there because Romano and Swanson were hurt, or just completely ineffective if their name was Mitch White, Tim Mazza, or Hennessy Cabrera. So it's kind of been a weird start to the season because Yimi Garcia looks better than I have ever seen him pitch. He's thrown the two hardest pitches of his career in his age 33 season.
He's only 33.
Yeah.
Wow.
Chad Green has been not amazing looking, but certainly fine and effective.
Mm-hmm.
Nate Pearson was unscored upon. He's the only pitcher on the Blue Jays who has not only not been scored upon, but not given up a home run, other than Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. But they had Wes Parsons had a 10.8 ERA out of the pen. Paolo Espino, 7.7. And Mitch White, 5.4. Tim Mazza, 9.45. Genesis Cabrera, 8.22. Right? These guys just were throwing gas on the fire too much.
Mm-hmm.
But now that Romano and Swanson are back, Swanson had a rough outing. Whatever. First outing. I don't care that much. His stuff looked good. So I assume Swanson's going to be good. Now you're back in a situation where Romano, Swanson, Green, and Garcia are your top four. And Richards is fumbling around in there when they need certain types of outs with all his strikeout ability.
Mm-hmm.
And that allows them to just deploy Mazza and Cabrera when they need to be deployed. So I do think that's going to right itself. And we've seen in these close games, when the Jays are winning, they go to their good relievers and they hold the leads, again, yesterday notwithstanding.
Are you worried about Mesa's velocity? His fastball is down like almost 5 miles an hour, I think.
No, it's two, but...
Really? Yeah. On Fangraphs, for instance, they got it at 93.
Are you talking about his max velocity or his average?
Max, yeah.
Oh, okay. I was thinking about average velocity, where it's down... Yeah, like 1.5 to 2 miles an hour.
Okay.
He's hit 95, and his max velocity in his career is like 97. So, yes, that is a thing. Last year it was 96.5. I don't worry about it too much early in the season.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, I would like to see him throwing a little bit harder.
Yeah.
But last year, for example, his max velocity, oh no, that was March. So no, he was 96 pretty much right away. The thing for me isn't so much his velocity being there, though, it's the command. Tim Mazza,
yeah.
I mean, this was a guy that last year, across the entire season of 53 innings, walked three batters intentionally and 12 unintentionally. So 12 unintentional walks. He's already at 7 6 2/3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if there is one area they will need to shore up in the bullpen, it is a lefty, because him and Hennessy Cabrera just don't feel as locked down as the four guys you mentioned earlier. And, you know, Green, Romano, Swanson and Garcia.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. But if you look at no one's expecting Tim Mazza to repeat last year with his 1.52 ERA and his 80-something% strand rate. That's just not realistic.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy he was in 2021 and 2022, who was, you know, he had still had a very low walk rate, an acceptable strikeout rate, high ground ball rate, kept his ERA in the low to mid threes. That guy, I think...
Mm-hmm.
He should be expected to be that. And I do think he'll be better. I actually think the Jays have an incredibly deep and strong bullpen. Cabrera is Cabrera. I don't know what to make of that guy.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's your first lefty out of the pen when you still have Richards, Swanson, Mazza, and Green, who can all get left-handed batters out, I'm not overly worried about it.
Yeah. The other interesting thing about Mazza is his ground ball rate is way down this year.
Sure is.
Yeah. So, like, the... 2021 to 2023, it was between 58% and 59%, basically, and it's at 30. Is he doing anything differently that's changing the batted ball profile like that?
I think it's location-based, to be honest. I think that, I mean, yeah, there is obviously the element of him not throwing as hard, which, you know, that mm-hmm. that's a thing. But his sinker is sinking even more than normal. or fighting gravity. Yeah, it's sinking to the low. To has the most downward break,
mm-hmm.
or yeah, the most fight. Whatever, the most gravity effect. I don't know how to word this, but it's going yeah. down the most that it ever has.
Mm-hmm.
The horizontal break is down a bit by about 3/4 of an inch, which could be a factor in both the location, like his command, and the ability of people to lift the ball.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's also just throwing a lot more sliders.
Right.
Which
is what people do when their velocity's down.
Yeah, you see, he's up to 35% sliders, which, I mean, last year was 25. It's not like it's an insane increase, but it is a different way of approaching the hitters. So,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I need to see more from Meza to really understand what's wrong there, but I don't think he's going to be bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's kind of what it is. But the amazing thing is the Jays are 10-9,
mm-hmm.
despite opening the season with 10 on the road against the Tampa Bay Rays, the New York Yankees, and the Houston Astros. And then they come home to face the Mariners, who are a very good team, the Rockies, who are not a very good team, and then the Yankees, who are a very good team. So to have a winning record at this point is actually incredible.
So I'm going to push back a little bit against that, Josh, in the sense that I think if we want to view the Jays as a playoff contender, one of the elite teams in the American League.
Sorry, I meant given how bad the offense has been and how bad those relievers have been, the fact that they have a winning record is incredible.
Yeah. I do feel like there is a lot of discussion sometimes around the team where, it's only expected they kind of tread water against good teams, and I think they got to beat them, right? If you're going to...
No, I agree.
Yeah.
But if you told me that the lineup would be what the lineup has been,
mm-hmm.
that, they'd be out there where they're hitting... Where they have a 600 OPS with runners on base, and, where with runners on third and less than two outs, they have a 530 OPS with a 182 batting average. And... with runners on third and less than two out, they have a 33 plate appearances and only 14 times has the run come home.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that if you told me that had happened and that you told me that Tim Meza has been awful.
Yeah.
That Genesis Cabrera has been awful. That they did not have Romano and Swanson. That Gausman would be awful for two starts. And they'd still be 10-9 against those teams. I'd be pretty thrilled. So I do think mm-hmm. that the fact that given all that, they are still where they are is actually very encouraging because they should be better than that.
Yeah. Do you think there's anything to the struggles with runners in scoring position? Because that was obviously a topic for the better part of the first half last year. They kind of got really hot in the summer and then kind of cooled off again. Is there something about the hitters' profiles or something that is making it harder for them to cash runners? Obviously, they have a few players that are extremely slow. Some of their contact ability might lead to more ground balls, which lead to more double plays. That's just me speculating again. I haven't dug into any numbers or anything like that.
So this is the interesting thing about this. So last year, until about basically late June, maybe even early July, the Jays were incredibly bad with runners in scoring position or with runners on base. Even their offensive numbers were just a lot worse. By the end of the year, the team as a whole had a 743 OPS with the bases empty.
Mm-hmm.
With runners in scoring position, it was 730. With runners on base, it was 748. And with runners on third, less than two out, 813. So that, the Jays actually turned into a pretty balanced, and their splits in those situations were almost non-existent. Obviously, the runner on third, less than two out, you just generally are going to hit better there. The Jays this year are not, but generally you will just because of pressure on the pitcher and whatnot. And sac flies,
driving
on batting average, whatever, all that stuff. So we'll throw that one out. But with runners on base and runners not on base, runners in scoring position, all those things, they basically had the exact same numbers. So I don't think there's anything in the profile that would lead to things like that because it normalized. I think that's honestly just fluke.
Yeah.
It's like if guys are hitting, they should hit with runners in scoring position. And you get a guy like Justin Turner who hits way better with runners in scoring position. But generally, teams hit slightly better with runners in scoring position versus not, just because pressure on the pitcher is amplified. So they're not going to pitch as well. That's kind of the thinking behind that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think that might be one of those things that it feels like these kinds of fluctuations are bigger than they are because we only follow one team as closely as we follow the Jays. And I'm sure if we watched the Padres or Astros, you might see that, oh yeah, they had a 3-week stretch where they hit 120 with runners in scoring position too, and all of
right.
that. Yeah.
The Padres had a similar thing last year as the Jays, actually. Very good comparison. The problem is that, as from a fan perspective, this is what people expected mm-hmm. after last season. And then having it start again this way is just kind of driving people a little over the edge.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is a team that has a 340 on base as a team with nobody on base.
It's a good on base.
It's very good on base percentage when there's nobody on, and 320 something with runners on base, which is okay, but it's not really what you want. But they've had a lot of runners on base and not a lot of runs. And that is something just theoretically should normalize over the course of the season, especially if Kevin Kiermaier is just done,
mm-hmm.
he stops playing.
Yeah.
Right? If Alejandro Kirk is just not able to hit anymore, well, Danny Jansen just plays way more than Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing applies with basically everyone on this roster except George Springer that is the riskier hitters, because I don't consider Bo and Vlad risky hitters. I don't think you do either.
No. Are you worried about Kirk? I know we didn't really talk about him in the earlier section.
He's walking again, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
He's not hitting for any power. His exit velocities are way down. He's not lifting the ball. I think he needs to make an adjustment. I think he can make it. So worried, I don't know if I'd say worried, mm-hmm. but not as confident as I was before.
Yeah. Well, there's lots of season left to figure it out.
There is. All right, so let's take a quick break because we've been talking for a long time. We'll come back. I have a little cliche of the week to do because we don't have any questions, and then we'll do a final thought.
Great.
Baseball. Klazuski, Campanella, talking baseball. The man and Bobby Feller, the scooter, the barber, and the nuke. They knew them all from Boston to Dubuque, especially Willie, Mickey, and the Duke. Well, Casey was winning, Hank Aaron was beginning.
All right, we're back after a short break there. And we're going to bring something back that we have not done in a while. I might even be like 2 or 3 years, but we have the cliche of the week, which is more the cliche of the, I don't know, 3 years, because again, we don't do it very often.
Man, what a cliche.
I thought writers hated cliches.
So the Jays took the first 2 of 3 against the Mariners, lost the last one. Took the first 2 of 3 against the Yankees, lost the last one. Both games they should have won. And I heard a lot of they won the series. And I just don't understand, why is a series relevant in the regular season? Why do people care about winning the series? You've won the first 2 games. Now you need to win the third one, right? It's like you don't get bonus points for winning the series until you get to the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know why this is part of the regular lingo. You just need to win more games than the other guy. And if you got a chance to win 3, you shouldn't be okay with only winning 2.
No. Well, especially like you said, if they're very winnable games, like those games were.
Yeah. I mean, even if they're not, to be honest, like if you win the first 2 games and get blown out in the third and you say, at least we won the series, I don't get it. I don't get that at all. It's like, you could have won 3 games. You already knew you won 2 games before you played that third one. So why are you consoling yourself with something that is actually literally meaningless?
Yes. I know it's probably not that important in the grand scheme of things, but as a fan, it was kind of frustrating to see them get blown out by the Rockies in the first game of that series, because that's another series where, like, you should sweep.
It should. I mean, I agree. They did not play well in that first Rockies game. That was Kevin Gausman being bad. Anyway, so that's it. I just, the lingo, I don't get why it's used that way, because series results only matter and when you get to the postseason.
Agreed.
All right. Like I said, we don't have any questions today because we were recording the afternoon and I didn't put the call out in time because I'm just not prepared. So do you have a final thought?
Yeah. So my final thought was just going to be kind of on the rash of pitching injuries and kind of the state of pitching injuries in baseball. This is obviously something near and dear to our hearts, and that our friend Mike Son has done a lot of research into this. But my final thought is I've just really appreciated the kind of thoughtful and nuanced takes that some current MLB pitchers have given on the state of pitching injuries, whether it's, you know, Justin Verlander said some interesting things, Chris Bassett on the Jays has said some interesting things. And I think they've been very measured and nuanced, and none of them are coming out and trying to blame one thing. And they seem to all understand kind of the multifaceted things at play. And I've just been really impressed by it. And it's interesting to hear guys like that talk about, you know, how pitching has changed or how the game's changed and how they approach things. Ohtani, I think, said some interesting things too about it, about how you want to make every pitch the best pitch you can make, and kind of inferring that that means in 2024 throwing close to max velocity. I highly recommend checking out some of that stuff. And if you're a Jays fan, start with what Chris Bassett said.
And I recommend also listening to Tyler Glasnow. Did you hear what he said?
Oh, no. Did he speak yesterday or something?
A couple days ago, but he said it's worth getting injured, the risk of getting injured, to throw as hard as you can on every pitch.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating from a guy who's always injured.
Yeah.
But I guess if you look at it, like, he got $130 million guaranteed, was it?
Yep, I think somewhere around there, like 120. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, he gets hurt all the time, but he throws so hard and he throws so well that people will keep dreaming that he can stay healthy. Look at Carlos Rodon. Carlos is going to get $200 million.
Oh, really? Wow, jeez.
Yeah, because people dream that he can just stay healthy for them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting, but I agree with everything you said. Like the interesting takes on all of it are really fascinating if you are a baseball fan that we are.
And it's just great to have the conversation, not just get kind of pigeonholed into these very simplistic things. Because I think it was Clayton Kershaw who said, like, look, if there was a simple answer to this or someone had figured it out, they would have done it and that person would have been insanely wealthy. So everybody acknowledging all the kind of complications and nuances is really refreshing in a conversation like this.
Yeah. I agree. So my final thought is, taking it back to the micro, I just feel really bad for Nate Pearson.
Yeah.
Aww. Guy finally looks healthy. And in his last outing, he's throwing 99 on pretty much every fastball. He hits 102 with one of them, strikes out the side, looking absolutely dominant. As I said, he didn't give up a run. Six and a third, 9 strikeouts, 3 walks, 4 hits. It just sucks. He got squeezed out. And that's just the way it happens sometimes, because they needed the long man while Yuriel Rodriguez is building up. They couldn't send Bowden Francis to the minors. But if he can keep doing that, then he could be a real valuable piece for this bullpen. Obviously, like, even in the 6 innings, his velocity was up and down. There's a big difference between Pearson throwing 96-97 and 98-99 to 100+.
Mm-hmm.
When he's doing the latter, he's untouchable.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just feel bad because he did nothing to earn the demotion, and it was just sort of his time.
Mm-hmm. My hope is that someone in the Brew Jays front office is being pretty clear with him that this isn't merit-based. This is about roster management and options, and, you know, he'll be back up as soon as possible, because it is pretty, pretty tough for someone to literally not allow a run, an earned run, and then get sent down.
Yeah. If you've ever watched The Wire, the Snoop line, when they're talking about not sending someone to the minors, but killing someone, you know, deserve got nothing to do with it. It's his time. That's all. That's just what it was. Yeah. He didn't deserve it, but it's too bad.
Yeah. Well, hopefully he can just keep up, you know, the velocity gains and, like, keep the walks in check, because, you know, they're going to need another reliever at some point. Also, if he keeps this up, like, one through five in the Jays bullpen, like, that is nasty.
Agreed.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you've been Nick Dyka, not on social media, and I'm Joshua Housam at Joshua Housam. This has been episode 290 of Artificial Turf Force.